3-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde.
Our very first guest in the history of Wilde and Tausch, which will be, I'm sure, a long and distinguished history.
Packers Hall of Famer Mark Tauscher.
Aaron Rodgers, give us an over-under on what number would you set for how many shows we do.
Broadcasting live from the Everlight Solar Studio at ESPN Madison.
I'm going to say daily 52 weeks in a year. I'm going to say you do about 230.
And celebrating 10 great years on ESPN Wisconsin.
And then what happens?
No, then Tausch kind of bows out.
This is Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin.
One for me, because I have been a cousin sub of the day on this show previously. Wilde and Tausch across ESPN Wisconsin. I'm the cousin sub of the day, Gabe Neitzel. Owen, also a cousin sub of the day, as no Jesse Nelson today. But I don't know, Tausch, in the 10-year history of this show, I don't know if I've done this show with you. I've done it with Jason. I've done it with other people. I don't know if I have ever done this show with you. We've worked together on plenty of other things. We've done things on the network together before. But I don't know if I've ever done Wilde and Tausch with you, the Packers Hall of Famer Mark Tauscher.
Well, as you know, Gabe, I chronicle everything. So I looked back at my notes, and I don't know either if we have. But we will be doing it today, which... You are you're a pro's pro. You are a national. You're doing national constantly, right? You're still grinding away, and you're. What's your average national? What are you doing? 10, 15 shows a month nationally.
Probably somewhere around there. Yeah, somewhere between 10 and 15 every month.
Well, thank you for bringing your national talents to our local show here from 9 till noon today. We appreciate you.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Although. I heard, now I was not listening because yesterday was the Delzer ESPN Milwaukee Open, but were you taking shots at my hometown of Horicon yesterday? Is that a thing that was going on? Are we going to have problems?
First off,
that was the rumor.
I don't know where you're getting your sourcing from. I've always loved Horicon, and what I may have done is talked about, because obviously everybody knows there's a big marsh there, right? That if somebody says Horicon, they're going to say marsh. That's kind of the way
they
that goes.
They think of the marsh. Home of the marshmen.
And I just assumed that there were ducks there, that people duck hunted there. Sure, there's geese as well. And one of our former teammates is talking about, because I don't make that trip a lot outside of going to the bog. Like, you go down, I go to Beaver Dam every once in a while for sports, but you never really make that right on 33, and then, you know, we'd go to some spots in West Bend. We're big in West Bend. I don't know if Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, where you're, we have a big pocket of fans in West Bend.
Okay.
So, we've done some events in West Bend, and that area of the state, I think it's I don't want to say represented, but I was trying to find a term yesterday, because we have the potato corridor. We got the Driftless region, obviously Fox Valley. And I didn't realize there's that many people in that area. When you start talking about West Bend has 35,000 people, Horicon, 10,000 people.
No, that area, Horicon's less than four.
Less than four? What's the, 4,000. You then have, what are the other cities that you go along the way on Highway 33?
So on 33, you kind of go through Beaver Dam, you hit Horicon, you hit Allenton right before you get to West Bend, and then you keep going to Saukville. Saukville's bigger than I thought it was, not going to lie. Yeah. Saukville being over 4,000 people, being bigger than Horicon, didn't see that coming. And I don't ever recall noticing it until I was driving back into Saukville yesterday on my way home.
Newburgh is Newburgh one. That's another town on the way, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's a smaller town.
Yeah, so there's,
Well, anyways, and then you start getting into Slinger and other areas.
Yeah.
And you start, where does it start where you start thinking, oh, this is Milwaukee? I would say Mequon, probably gets lumped into Milwaukee. West Bend?
Yeah.
And that was my discussion yesterday. And I just was thinking, what is that area of the state called? Like, what is that kind of, you know, because if you go all the way, you know, Fond du Lac, and I would put Fond du Lac up in the Fox Valley region. I wouldn't mm-hmm. with West Bend. But the bottom line was, I was and you could tell me better than anybody, is it known for geese or ducks? Like, is that marsh duck or a goose area for hunting?
You can find some ducks, certainly, but it's more geese. Like, there's just geese everywhere, man. There's geese everywhere in Horicon. You just can't, you can't escape it. It's everywhere. And those, like, you don't want to mess with geese. Geese are mean you-know-whats. Like, you don't want to mess with geese.
Well, and they poop everywhere. Like, that is a pooping
that
operation.
Too. That doesn't...
You see that at parks, if you're golfing, if you're walking, you're going to see if it's a goose population, there's going to be goose poop everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, well, I guess we're... Okay, I thought you were taking shots, but you were just missing...
No, no shots.
Okay. There's no problem with that.
I'm not Jesse Nelson taking shots at McGuanago. Like, I don't have any... The only place I take shots at is Oostburg, and that's just because they've given me a lot of heartbreak with our tough loss way back in 1995 in the state basketball finals. Outside of that, I don't have a lot of beef with a lot of cities and regions in this great state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, because, again, you are, as a citizen of Wisconsin, you've lived everywhere, man. Like, you grew up in a smaller town, obviously now in Madison, bigger area. Like, you've been everywhere. You're a man of the people. And
I just got a text, and Gabe, I'm not going to besmirch you.
Okay.
But old boy, Pat Mayo, who I worked with back, he was up at WBAY when I did.
Yeah.
He's like, dude, Pat, it's a duck hunting marsh. You're Mr. Horicon. That's what I thought. When I hear marshes, and I'm thinking, I think duck hunting. And I am not a big duck hunter. I've hunted.
Yeah.
I just assume.
Maybe the old Nintendo game. That was more of duck hunting. You do the duck hunter.
Is it possible
with the dog laughing at you if you missed?
Is it possible you're wrong?
I don't think so. I mean, can you find ducks there? You can. Can you go duck hunting on the marsh? Sure. But the number of geese to duck, I mean, that ratio is out of control for geese. The geese to duck ratio is out of control.
So you're saying if we have a bunch of hunters call and I say, mm-hmm. what is, if you're going to go hunt the Horicon Marsh, you're going to get more geese and you're going to get opportunities to get duck.
I would agree with that. And again, you can hunt duck. You certainly can. There are some out there.
Pat,
but yeah, there's geese.
Pat says no.
There's more geese.
Take that for what it's worth. Let's take that for what it's worth.
I disagree with Pat. We'll put it out there. Another Marshman, graduate. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. All right, so Gabe, one of the things I love about when I head down to Milwaukee, obviously we can hear mm-hmm. Jen, Gabe, and Chewy when you stream. You can get it on the app. You can do that up here in Madison. We don't have – it's not on 100.5. It is on 94.5, so I got a chance to check you guys out a little bit yesterday. What were the big hot topics today on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy?
So we did, a couple of different things, and there's one I definitely want to get into coming up next. So we'll get into the Colston Loveland, how the Bears think about the Packers. We're definitely going to get into that here on Wilde and Tausch. We were talking about the Brewers having the toughest strength of schedule post All-Star break in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
So, Gabe, if I may, I will interrupt you,
as you know. That's what I do, so don't take any offense to my interrupting. It's just how my mind works. So the Brewers, you are a Brewers aficionado. You watch and you cover. You're all in. You love baseball. I know all that.
Yep.
Am I crazy? Because, listen, I have been all in. Last year, I don't think I watched a lot of games last year. This year it's been a little different, scheduling, et cetera, et cetera. Peacock and Apple and all the other stuff. But
and do you we feel all know you're better a streaming about guy. You hate all the streaming services.
I like Netflix. No. I don't have a problem with all of them. It's the ones that are, but that's a story for another day.
Sure.
How do you feel? Because I felt great last year. Knew that was a good mm-hmm. team. But we all kind of resigned ourselves like, this team's not going to be good enough to beat the Dodgers. And now with Miz becoming Miz, like the big-time Miz. But did this last right before the All-Star break and all of the stuff that happened, whether it's Harrison going on the IL, obviously the bad news on Woody, and then this rest for Miz. How are you feeling about where they're standing right now, and does it change your attitude about what they need to do before the trade deadline with what happened the last 10 days?
The only thing that changes my attitude of what is the Woody injury. The fact that we haven't heard what the second opinion was, but we know he's gotten a second opinion, and after the second opinion, he went on the 60-day IL. Probably wasn't a good second opinion. You know, we'll find out whatever that second opinion is, but I've also been on the train of if somebody, and it doesn't look like Scooble's going to become available because the Tigers have been playing really well, so the Tigers are probably going to want to be more buyers than anything else, but they need at least another starting pitcher. Because I don't think you can have a chance against the Dodgers going into that series if you have two guys you trust in Miz and Kyle Harrison, who, by the way, neither have started a playoff game ever. The Miz was only coming out of the bullpen. He was fantastic. I don't want to take that away from him, but he's never started a postseason game.
Do you trust Kyle Harrison?
I do. I think his stuff stands up. I think his stuff stands up.
Right.
I trust him just as much as I would have trusted Quinn Priester going into the postseason last year. And that was somebody the Brewers obviously trusted. So it's after that, you need another guy you can trust in a postseason series, because I don't think you just cobble together starts the way they did last year. Oh, we'll start Ashby, and then we'll bring in Patrick, or we'll bring in Miz, and we'll do all these different things. I don't think that's how you can sustainably win playoff series, especially against a team like the Dodgers. Because once they start seeing Ashby three or four times, it's going to be tougher for him to get outs. So you want to have another starter you can trust, I think, in order to feel good going in against a series against a team like the Dodgers. So whether Scooble's available or not, they need to go out and get another starting pitcher.
How would you feel if, and I was listening to a podcast on our drive back from the Delzer ESPN Milwaukee Open yesterday, how would you feel, because the Mets are going to sell. That was the big thing. Mets are selling.
Yeah.
What if we get old boy Peralta back?
I would like it, and for a couple of different reasons. A, it would be hilarious, because whatever the Brewers would have to give to get him back would be significantly less than what they got in return, right? It certainly wouldn't cost you what they got in return, and I just have faith that the Brewers coaching staff would be able to fix whatever's ailing Freddie. And now you go into a playoff series where Freddie's not your one, where you can go, okay, we can just get five out of Freddie here, five innings out of Freddie as our three, and he's not going up against another team's ace? I think that's a pretty darn spot, pretty good spot to be in. Plus, he's coming in. He's familiar. He knows the team. You know he fits into the culture. He's going to slide right back into what I think he was. And I know Brewers fans, some of them can get frustrated because Freddie, especially early in games, can have some longer innings. But I think him slotting into a number three spot behind Harrison, behind Miz, would be a dream come true.
Is there any chance that that happens?
I think it would be minimal, because I don't think, while David Stearns has the backing of his owner right now, if he were to trade Freddie back and the Brewers pitching staff does with Freddie what we think they can do with Freddie and he pitches well.
That's a coaching thing.
I don't know how David.
That'd be a coaching thing.
Well, sure. Sure, but you traded for the guy, he stunk, and then you trade him back and he's good, and you lost a bunch of prospects. Like, you're losing both ends of that trade. I don't think you can survive that as a GM, can you?
You would think not. No, I think there does come a point where you realize things. He's going to be a free agent. You're not going to re-sign him. It's better to go get a little something, even though you'd have to run with your tail between your legs, because you did it. This stuff happens, and I think of all of these things, what it shows is, yes, having a bigger payroll helps. It allows you to erase mistakes that you make, but it is not. David Stearns, I think, left Milwaukee thinking, I can utilize everything I did in Milwaukee, and now I have insurance that I can go and do other things and spend. It should be the best of both worlds, and obviously that has not been the case. Matt Arnold has stuck with what he does, and I wonder if that relationship may allow Stearns to feel like he can tuck his tail between his legs and move forward. Because you look at it, I don't know why. What would be the downside? The Mets are donezo. what would be the downside to pulling one of the Brewers' good prospects that they could then trade, get Peralta back, and then I think all of a sudden you do feel a heck of a lot better about that starting pitching. I'm a little more concerned with Harrison than you are. Jesse watches every game as well. He mentioned yesterday he hadn't been the same since that little pitching episode in a little baby park out there in Vegas. You wonder about a guy's psyche, and now you add in an elbow. If you take him out of this mix, and I don't know what's going to happen with him, all of a sudden now you are scrambling a bunch. It's one thing if you got to scramble once. If you got to scramble a couple times in a playoff series, all of a sudden that whole math on that changes. So all-star game, it gives you a chance, from my standpoint, from everybody's standpoint as Brewers fans, to kind of take a hard reset. You had the poor finish to the first half, not overly concerned. But when you start looking at the pitching, which is the big reason why this team is where they're at, all of a sudden I don't feel nearly as good about it. And I think it puts more urgency on Matt Arnold to do something splashy so that that clubhouse, I think, just like when they traded Josh Hader, it set the wheel in motion the opposite way a couple of years ago. I think doing something sooner rather than later, it can reset that and give that little kick, that little juice that a locker room needs, especially when you start getting into the dog days of summer.
Yeah, I completely agree. Trying to kind of give that jolt, because last year they had that jolt with the 14-game winning, the 14-game winning streak they ended up going on and being fantastic, which set the tone for the rest of the season. This team already better than that. This is the most wins they've had, and almost became part of an exclusive group that had 60 wins before the All-Star break. But having the most wins in Brewers history before the break, fantastic. Now they just need that little jump, which they've kind of slowly gotten throughout the season, right? Where they've had those little boosts of energies with guys coming back, whether it was Jackson Chourio coming back, and Cooper Pratt coming up, now Luis Lara coming up. They've had these little boosts of energy. So with the trade deadline coming up in just a few weeks, I think they are going to do something splashy and take a step out of that comfort zone that we've seen from Matt Arnold. But I guess we got to wait and see if that's ultimately what we do. But we're going to head back to Tausch's and the show's comfort zone, because Colston Loveland did have some very interesting comments on Bussin' with the Boys about how the Bears feel and think about the Packers. Tausch, will get to that after you tell everybody about our great friends at Pella Windows and Doors in Wisconsin.
Indeed, saw the great team out at the ESPN Milwaukee Open, Delzer Open, yesterday, and it's just always great to see them. And you know what? If you need new windows and doors, it shouldn't be a battle. It should be ease, not haggling. And Pella, they stick to that. Straightforward pricing, honest conversations, helping homeowners find the right fit for their home. They don't use high-pressure sales tactics. When you buy direct through Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, the same team that manufactures your windows and doors, they also sell them, install them, and service them. Real pricing, premium quality, no games. Schedule your free in-home consultation today at PellaWI.com. So Gabe mentioned the Loveland comments. There's no doubt. The Bears fans, Chicago sports fans, no matter if they're at a Cubs game, White Sox game, they are always thinking about the Green Bay Packers. Can't wait to get into that. And I also have a question for Gabe. What fan base has done that to Packer fans? We'll talk on both. We'll do that next. It's Wilty and Tausch.
Wilty and Tausch. He's the Packers Hall of Famer, Mark Tauscher. I'm your cousin sub of the day, Gabe Neitzel. And it's always fun, Tausch, at this time of year, when you're looking for something, when somebody just goes out there and decides, you know what, I'm going to say something that we're going to talk about. And that's basically what
chum
got
in the
out
water.
Of Colston Loveland.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what Colston Loveland did. The Bears tight end was on the popular podcast Bussin' with the Boys. And I guess I knew that the Bears thought about the Packers a lot. I didn't realize it went to this length, as here's Colston Loveland talking about how the Bears think and treat the Green Bay Packers down in Chicago.
It's like in the building, what are you doing to beat Ohio State every day? That was where it was in Michigan, every TV, everything. That's how it is. And at the Bears, it's everyone's only talking about the Packers. Owners hate them. Like, you know, it's just you can't go a day without talking about them, talk about beating them, talk about the bad things. So it's very comparable.
So did I hear that right, Tausch? Did Colson Loveland just say that the Bears inside their facility cannot go a day without talking about the Green Bay Packers?
That's what he just said, right? Yeah, it's literally verbatim. And it's not surprising. And I understood that the last couple of years because, you know, after Rodgers fired the old Reep, I own you belt, and everybody's like, ugh, he ain't wrong. Like, there's a complex that you can get. And when you're chasing something and building something and somebody just keeps – knocking you out and continuing to suppress you and not let you grow, I understand your frustration. I don't understand it now, though. I've been all offseason talking about how the Packers need to get out of the mindset of we own you, we still blanking own you, because that was Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers era. Yeah, mm-hmm. We did own you.
Yeah.
And, yeah, if you want to, you know, not believe and think about that, that's great. But from Chicago's standpoint, you never want to get fat and happy. But you just had the best season you could ever have against the Packers. And I know you didn't sweep them, but you gutted them like you haven't gutted them since Ditka. You haven't gotten – that's the first time in a while that Packer fans were murmuring blanking Bears after a season, probably since Ditka. If you could tell me a different time, I'm open to hearing it.
How many times did you lose to the Bears? You guys didn't lose to the Bears. Chewy said this morning, like, he thinks he lost to the Bears once.
Yeah, we lost more than once. Lovie Smith, they got us a few times. But for the most part, we obviously had the brutal season in 05 where we didn't beat him. You know, one of the goofiest games I ever played, and we ran 101 plays and scored 7 points because we turned the ball over, I think, 4 times in the red zone. And it was just that was that kind of year. But for the most part, we had really good games. We ended up on the winning ledger a lot more than the Chicago Bears did. But the point of this is, what I don't understand is you always can have that fire for the rivalry and keep it important. And I think, if we're being honest, the Packers lost that. I don't think that was there.
Absolutely.
For the last few years, and now it is. And however we want to approach that, obviously, you know, you can do it a little bit more understated than what Ben Johnson has done. But that quote from Loveland shouldn't surprise anybody. The head ball coach said he's talked to the owner about it, and the owner's all on board with this, you know, blank these guys and all the stuff that we heard after these games last year. The Bears have an inferiority complex against the Packers. That's fairly obvious. But they beat us last year. So I don't fully understand it, and I want to see that passion ratcheted up on Green Bay's side. And it doesn't need to be on July 15th, but it certainly does. You start prepping for that October, whatever day of the week or day of the month or whatever day that is in October where we play the Bears, because for the first time in a while, this rivalry is back red hot, and the Bears are the reason that that is the case. Now it's the Packers' turn to snuff that coal back out.
But Tausch, what I don't want, and I agree, the Packers, I think, have to put more energy and effort into this rivalry because they haven't had to. And now they got punched in the face last year. But yep. I don't want it to consume them the way that it consumes the Chicago Bears. Because I hear Loveland say that, and it's like, well, no wonder you guys lost in the next round. The big goal for you was beating the Packers. You did that in the wild card round. And the Packers have bigger goals than to beat the Chicago Bears. Do I want it to be important? Do I want it to be emphasized? Yes. But I don't want it to be like Ohio State, Michigan. And it's different in college, and it's even different even more now with the, you know, more teams making the playoff. But for the majority of Michigan, Ohio State, you had to beat that other team in order to accomplish that ultimate big goal that they had of winning a national championship. Now, Ohio State was able to lose to Michigan, still win a natty because of the way the playoff is set up now. I want the Packers to beat the Bears, and I want to win the division. In order to win the division, you got to beat the Bears. And I want the Packers to get a first-round bye. I want them to have home games at Lambeau Field. So I want this to be a goal. I just don't want it to be the top goal the way it appears that it was the top goal for the Chicago Bears of, oh, we just have to beat the Packers. That's what. So, yes, there's more energy that needs to go into it, but I don't know if I want them to match the energy that the Chicago Bears have of, this is the only thing that's important to us, and we're talking about it every damn day.
Yeah, I would say I understand your point on it, but I think there's only so much emotional capital that you can go through for a 17-game season. Because everybody will always say, oh, you came out flat. Oh, you did this. There are going to be games that mean more, and there's more juice out of the building, and then there's some games that there's more juice in the building. This game, that first time these two teams play, there needs to be juice pouring out of the building and in our fan base. Because I do think, while our goals are always going to be bigger, and I saw someone, I said this earlier this week on our show, someone had put the Bears, the Vikings, and the Lions, their Super Bowl is beating the Green Bay Packers. Our Super Bowl is trying to win a Super Bowl. I don't disagree with that. But what I am going to say is, there comes a point where you have to also look at things in a realistic way. And while we are title town and we do chase championships and our history is what it is, we haven't won a division in 4 years. And I think this, oh, well, we're above the fray. No. I just disagree.
Not,
we're not above
anymore.
The fray. We need to get in the fray. And we need to fight. And it needs to be, the intensity was not matched last year. It was not. And then we saw that the Bears, when they came into Lambeau the first time and we beat them late, their intensity was too much. They had to dial it back. If you remember, a ton of penalties, sloppiness. All I've been saying all offseason is, I don't need all of the but do I want an edge and say, these blank and blanks took away, ended our season last year. That ain't happening again. And the intensity gap, that has to be gone. That doesn't mean we can't focus on the Rams and everybody else. There's a lot of other games on the schedule that are going to be probably more important. But I think from an emotional standpoint and from a psyche standpoint, our first goal needs to get back to, we need to win this division. And who won the division last year? The Bears. What needs to happen? We need to kick their keister and stuff their torch, whatever you want to say. That also needs to be at the top of the list.
We've got to get to our buddy Brian Belaga. He's joining us next. But Tausch, you do have to tell the fine folks about the great relationship you have with UW Credit Union.
Indeed I do. And for every stage of life, UW Credit Union is here forever. You, proudly serving Wisconsin for over 90 years, are going to help you reach your financial goals. And we need to give the Bears the stiff arm when it comes to winning the division. UW Credit Union, they help as well. No monthly fees, no overdrafts. That's going to cost more than $5. They're going to help save its membership over $12 million per year. Join today at uwcu.org, insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions do apply.
Brian Belaga, Iowa. Coming up next, it's Willie and Tausch. Tausch, Gabe Neitzel with you, your cousin sub of the day, in for Jason Wilde, along with Mark Tausch. As we welcome in our guy, another right tackle from the Green Bay Packers. He is our guy. Catch him on the Homer Hour. I'm going to be excited to be working with him again once Green Bay game day rolls around. He is Brian Belaga joining us on the Yingling guest hotline. Blue, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. How are we doing, guys?
Gun shows in town, huh? Holy cats! Look at Blue. Just get done with a big pump.
Yeah, got done working out. Walked the dog. You know.
Okay.
Got my morning routine in. Yeah, of course.
All right. Love it. Love it.
For those not watching Blue, on YouTube, which you should be, Blue wearing a
yeah, you should be. Shame on you for not doing that. You get to see the ripped up arms of the big Bluester. Blue, Gabe and I were just talking about this Colston Loveland, and I'm not sure if you saw this or not, his comments about how the Bears are always thinking about the Packers. You being an Illinois guy back in the day, does that surprise you at all that it's just a nonstop, I can't stop thinking about you when it comes to the Bears-Packers relationship?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all, really. I mean, I think that's because I think the Packers are the benchmark, right? I really do. I think what they've accomplished and what they've achieved, and you've been part of that success. I've been part of that success, but obviously very fortunate to be and played with great quarterbacks, great players. Chicago had that rolling for a little bit in the 80s, and then obviously hasn't been the way they wanted to go. And then the Packers obviously took off, and they have kind of set the benchmark for, you know, the NFC North. Obviously, they haven't won the division in a few years now, but I mean, you think you look at the past success and sustained winning and making the playoffs and things like that, that's the benchmark. So you look at teams like the Bears, like even the Lions now, like they want that sustained success. That's like the model, right? So to say that's all we think about, and then for how long Green Bay has absolutely kind of pummeled Chicago and owned them in the rivalry game, you could say. It's kind of become a rivalry now that they've won a couple. That would be all you think about is trying to beat them, be like them, be better than them. It doesn't surprise me much. And it's the same thing with the fans. It's the same. The fans could be worse. Their delusion is, I think it may be creeping into the locker room, how those guys are thinking. Because, like, if you're a player, if all you think about is one team, right? Like, if that's all you think about all the time is one team, like, that's not healthy. Because, I mean, I didn't think about that when I was playing. I doubt you did either. I was worried about the next game and the next team, not really one team. Yeah, like you knew if there was a good team, like teams that were on the rise. Like when I was playing, it was the 49ers for a bit with Harbaugh, and then it was Seattle for a bit. And like you are aware of those teams, but it's not all I think about. I'm worried about who I'm playing week one, then week two, then week three. It has nothing to do with I'm so worried about what Seattle's doing this week, man. I can't even focus on what I'm doing. So, like, I think the fans' delusion is creeping into the players.
So with that,
Brian,
being said, then, Bloom,
how do you balance that? My bad, Gabe. How do you balance that? Because Gabe and I were just talking about this, and Gabe's point was just what you were saying. We have bigger fish to fry. Totally agree with that. But with that said, there does have to be a rise in intensity, and the idea, because when you and TJ and City and Rogers, and it was the I own you and all that stuff, it was a foregone conclusion. Those days are gone. So how do you balance the mindset you're talking about, which is the right way, and compared to the Bears' intensity was higher than ours last year, and you know there's other reasons why we didn't beat the Bears and why they beat us in a playoff game. How do you balance that with, all right, yeah, I agree, but it's time we got to win a blank in division, and we need to maybe ratchet this up a little bit, because even with the Bears' success against this last year, I don't think things have changed down at Halas Hall, according to Colston Loveland and everybody else that talks down there.
Yeah, no, and for me, if I'm in Green Bay right now and I'm an older guy on that team or a veteran on that team or someone that has pull in the locker room, I think one of the messages, not a message, but kind of that mindset needs to be like, we are super focused on the three teams in our division. Like, we are hyper-focused on that. Like, that is, like, I'm not saying you have to be so focused on Detroit or Chicago or even Minnesota, but, like, our division in general is the most important thing right now. Like, that is the most important piece to this season is winning that division. And if that means that you need to feel a certain type of way about Chicago or Minnesota or Detroit and that gets you fired up, like, that's cool. That's fine. Whatever floats your boat. But the overall feeling should be this division, the North, like this is the most important thing this season. That's period, end of discussion. I get the other goals and other things that people want this team to achieve, but it all starts there, right? Like that's where this starts, is winning that division. And to me, if it's not being obsessed with any of the teams in the division, it's just as a total picture, knowing that this is the most important thing. So when you approach those games in the season, right, when you go to Chicago or have Minnesota at home or whatever it may be, like the intensity of those games have to ratchet up. And Aaron always used to call them no friend games. Like there's no pleasantries being exchanged during TV timeouts before the game. You may have a buddy that you played with in college. There's no pleasantries in these games. These are no friend games. Like you're not out there to try to get Pro Bowl votes from guys on the other roster and do all that junk. Like that's not what this is about. This is like, it's business. Like this is personal business when you go out there and play those teams. And that should be the mindset of these guys. Like when you play these division opponents, like this is, we are literally trying to stomp you out. And that should be the thought process. And that hopefully is the message that's getting sent throughout that locker room, is this, as we build up the training camp.
Brian Belaga joining us on the Yingling guest hotline. And Blue, the other thing going on in the NFL right now, ESPN with the talking to coaches, executives, scouts, putting out their top 10 at every position. Jordan Love, apparently close, but did not get into the top 10. That place was taken by Caleb Williams. Was that surprising to you that there's a large number of people in the league that don't look at Jordan Love as a top 10 guy at that position?
Yeah, I mean, it is surprising to me, obviously, because I think he's better than Caleb Williams. But I think it comes down to winning the division and winning a playoff game, right? Like, I really do. I think if Green Bay beats Chicago in that playoff game, Jordan Love's in that top 10 and maybe even creeps a little bit higher because of the way he performed in the playoff game. And then maybe who knows how he performs in the next playoff game. So I feel it comes down to you didn't win the division. You lost to them head to head twice in the most important games of the season, essentially. That's why they give him the nudge. And then obviously Caleb Williams made a couple of really big splash plays at the end of games in the last few weeks of the season. And that's what people remember. That's what people always remember. I mean, I talk about it from a playoff standpoint, even from if you don't play well in a playoff game, that's what fans remember. That's what everyone remembers, that you didn't play well in that game or whatever. It's the same way if you play really well in a playoff game. That's the last thing someone remembers. They don't remember your body of work from that season. They just remember a single performance. And I think that's kind of what this is to me. I think they've elevated a little bit of the hero ball at the end of the game that isn't sustainable. And they've elevated that to what if they were running a franchise, what they'd want: a consistent, steady presence at quarterback that you know isn't going to beat you. He's very capable. He puts up really good numbers. No, he's not. Jordan Love by no means is the flashy quarterback, and he's not super out loud and outspoken and this and that. But I'll tell you this much, like, you look at that playoff game against Chicago, I bet you every damn GM in the NFL would take that performance, because that was pretty good. If you look at those numbers, I bet they take that performance all day, every day, over an, I don't know what Caleb Williams' number were in that game. I know they weren't great, but he had the two chuck-up balls at the end of the game that they caught and brought down and they won. So I think it's just about what have you done in the last few weeks of the rate or the season. People remember that. If Jordan Love wins that game or the Packers win that game or if they won the division, it's a completely different list, in my opinion.
So, Brian, what is Jordan Love? And I'm not going to say what does he have to do to get into the top 10 list. But the question I have is, Jordan Love, has he elevated his guys around it? Because Aaron Rodgers, the reason he was always a no-doubter as a top five guy, and we would never have this discussion with Aaron in his prime, A, he had won a Super Bowl, and I think there's no doubt your point on winning a playoff game. And why Caleb is ahead, it's because of the plays he made that got them the clutchness that he had in those fourth quarters. That you got to tip your cap to him. Mm-hmm. What does Jordan have to do? And do you think up to this point he has elevated the rest of his team around him?
You know, I think to get into that list and to be part of that top 10 group, yeah, I mean, I think it comes down to winning divisions consistently and being in that picture often and frequent, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, Aaron, what he did was, I mean, it's Hall of Fame stuff, so, like, I don't have to repeat it for everyone that already knows that watched it and experienced it, but, like, it's just being more consistent in the winning aspect, right? Like, you look at Jordan Love's play, and, like, you look at his numbers, like, they're good numbers, they're consistent numbers, but then you have to look at the team aspect of it, and is the team winning divisions, is the team winning playoff games, like, all those things go into it, and Aaron obviously always had all that because of how well he performed, the team followed along with it, so that kind of goes on to the next point, is Jordan elevating other people? Well, in my opinion, I think from the wide receiver standpoint, I think he is. Like, you look at the way Tucker Kraft was playing prior to the injury, was playing great football. Christian Watson, when he returned and started playing, got him the football, played great football, got him a monster extension, right? So, like, you look at the way that the skill players around him are performing, and I think they're performing pretty well. Now, there's other positions, say, I don't want to say backup tight end because that's not – fair, but like you look at the offensive line and things like that, those guys I think need to elevate their play in general, like, right? Like, and I think if they elevate their play, you're going to see even better performances and numbers out of Jordan Love, because I think once that part does what they need to do, then the run game will come and more things will build off of that, and you'll have a more consistent, complete offense around Jordan Love, right? And that, to me, that'll make him look even better than what I think he's doing right now. And there's obviously room for improvement that Jordan can make in certain situations and things like that. There's no doubt. Not saying he's perfect. But I think overall, like, he's done a pretty good job of elevating guys around him, especially in the skill position category.
Well, Blue, you talk about the offensive line, and over at channel3000.com right now, Will Dee's putting together his top 20-ish, because it's more than 20 names on the list.
It's 33.
So it's top 20-ish.
Yeah, I think it's 33.
Yeah, it's one of these days, he's going to get all 53 on there. It's going to be impressive. But so far in the countdown, he has mentioned... He tag-teamed Jagger Burton and Anthony Belton at 19. He had Aaron Banks at 18, Sean Ryan at 17 in terms of the most important Packers. Who is the most important offensive lineman this year in your mind in order for them to come together and be a little bit better to protect Jordan so he can do all the things that we've talked about him and what he's capable of doing?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think you look at the guys he's, you know, already kind of gone through, and Belton and Burton and Sean Ryan, and you know, you look at those guys, and yeah, like, clearly they need to perform well. Like, that whole group has a really big, I think, spotlight on them this year, to raise their level of play and their standard and what true consistency looks like from a group, right? Like, week in and week out, being the same guys all the time. And I feel like beating a dead horse here. I mean, this is going to come down to how Jordan Morgan performs at that left tackle position. Because if he doesn't perform well, what changes and rotations do you make at that position to figure it out? And that's when things start then getting kind of screwy, right? Because, like, okay, maybe say it doesn't work, and then you have to kick Belton out there, and Belton hasn't done that job in how long, even from collegiate, and that means then you're inserting Burton in at right guard, and that's a rookie. You know, I get Belton did it last year, but there's a rookie then put in at right guard, and the expectation should be the expectation. That's to perform at a high level if you're in there. So, like, a lot of this rides on how Jordan Morgan performs at the left tackle position. And I, you know, Joe Thomas talked about it a little bit earlier. You know, he was at a practice or an OT. I don't know what he was at, but he said he watched Jordan Morgan and liked a lot of stuff that he did and how his footwork was and things like that. Like, and Tausch and I have always said that the footwork is not the issue. It's never been the issue. Even coming out of college, you watch his tape, it screams tackle tape, just the way his feet are and things like that. It's the translation of handling power in the NFL compared to handling power at the collegiate level. And that's been something he struggled with. I get at guard, it's a different beast, but then you kick him out at right tackle, it was the same thing. And then he played left tackle for a game or I don't even know how many games total. And that was also the issue, was handling the speed to power, right? Like, it's the footwork is one thing, and then it's what you do with that footwork in at the point of engagement. And to me, if he's solved that or he's gotten better at that part of his game, is absorbing power and then redirecting after he's taken power on, then I think he's going to have a solid to good season, because I think a lot of attributes are there for him to be a good left tackle in this league. It's just like, There's certain things that playing tackle that Tausch knows, and I learned it really quick when I became, you know, not just a starter, but when I walked in and started going against Clay right away. Like, if you can't handle power as a tackle in the NFL, it's over. It's over from the start, because that's how DNs are going to set everything up. They're going to throw you fastballs, and then a changeup's going to come and you're going to whiff. And to me, that's like the biggest part of this unknown with Jordan Morgan at left tackle, is has that problem kind of gotten solved? It's not here saying he's not a strong guy. There's a difference between being a strong guy and handling power from a pass rusher and then redirecting quick off that when he counters it and things like that. So if that part of his game has gotten better, I'll feel really good about this group, because when you're able to have Zach Tom out at right tackle that you trust, that can block one-on-one, and you like how he is as a player, and say Jordan Morgan is, you know, he has solved that issue, and he does have a good season, and your left tackle, you feel good about leaving him out on an island in a lot, not every situation, but a lot of situations. What you can do in the pass game then, and how you slide protections and what you can do, it opens up a lot of things, right? And you could protect potentially Belton or Banksy or whatever you need to do on the inside, and really shore things up in the middle of that pocket, so Jordan Love has a nice, you know, place to step up and throw the football. That's important. So, like, it's always going to be Jordan Morgan for me and how he performs, because that's our biggest unknown at this point with that group.
Brian, what are you going to be looking for to see that? Because he's going into his fourth year, right? Or is it third year? I always get that confused. I think he's going into his fourth year.
I think fourth.
Third
yeah.
year? So
I think
what,
fourth,
at
right?
some point, at, I think so. Gabe will fact check that for us. Gabe, this is the beauty of hosting with me. I ask you to fact check a lot. What are you looking for, and how confident are you that what you were just saying, I could not, for who's not on YouTube, I'm shaking my head, because if you can't handle power, that's all you're going to see. And it gets ugly. How confident are you that he's going to be able to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll get a pretty good read on it within the first 2 weeks of the season. Because who do they play week one and week two? I forgot who they play week one and week two.
Minnesota and the Jets.
Minnesota and the Jets.
At Minnesota, which we all know, that's never a fun place to go.
No. So you're going to find out week one, because you're going to be laid off the ball, or you shouldn't be if you got your snap count timed out really well. But there's going to be a chance that you're laid off the ball from time to time. And normally when you're laid off the ball, those DNs see one thing and they see a very weak outside shoulder, and they're going to put their face mask right on it and try to bull rush you back, because mm-hmm. you're – getting out of your stance weird. So you're going to see it really quick. Has he adjusted to being able to handle power in uncomfortable situations and then redirect off that? And to me, like, do I think he can do it? Yes, because I think the footwork is necessary to be able to handle it is there. It's just what happens after that point, at the point of contact, that is the unknown. Because
and will he trust it?
Yeah.
Isn't that the big thing, Blue? Like, it's one thing you handle it. It's another thing you have to trust that you can do that. Because if you start just setting it and your feet sit there and the fastball and changeup is 100% right, because you're sitting there and all of a sudden it's a quick arm over or a quick rip, and you're going to sit there either face down if you're a waistbender or boom. And that's the real question. Will Jordan Morgan trust that he can handle power? And I don't think we'll find that out. We'll have to see a little bit before we know that.
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see. And the thing is, it's based off, and from a player standpoint, it's got to be belief of what you've, the work you've put in the offseason and what you've done in training camp and how you've studied yourself in training camp to see where your deficiencies are and where your strengths are and how you can build your, I guess, how you play against guys, like how you can build your sets and what you do against guys based on how you've performed in training camp and these joint sessions with other teams and what you've experienced and studied yourself, right? Like that's like, I always thought studying myself on tape against guys like Clay and Julius when Julius was there and Nick Perry and guys like that, like that's how I studied where my weaknesses were and what I can improve on. And then how can I can change the look that I'm giving them to protect myself in certain situations, right? You're not going to be able to protect yourself in third and 10 and you're in scat. In five-man protection, you got a big duel, plus you got to block the defensive end, and like you're not protecting yourself there. But just basic pass rushing, you know, situations and basic, you know, second and six, and you're not in scat, and you're just in two jet or whatever it may be, and just a basic situation. How can you change the look for defensive ends to protect yourself, right? Like and play to your strengths.
But
like,
Brian, that's next level. That's next level stuff. Right, that's where when you feel confident. I don't think anybody that is just getting their feet wet, and that is Jordan Morgan, by the way, thank you, Owen, third year, who's drafted in 2024, has not played a ton at left tackle in games. He doesn't really know what he doesn't know yet because he hasn't really done it consistently. And I always think at that point when you're just figuring it out, you're kind of just looking there like, all right, I got to just block this guy. All right. You're not thinking dual. You know what I mean? You're not looking at all of those other things. You're just lining up saying, good Lord, let me just block this guy for a few times so that I could, you know, get set. And that's what we don't know. And that's what the Packers don't know either. But they do know what they got last year wasn't good enough, and they have to turn the reins over to a first-round pick that has all the skills. Then it just comes down to can they get it done.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like that was me my rookie year. Especially then I get to go play right tackle, which I never played. It was like, all right, I just got to block this guy. I don't know how regardless of how it looks, I just got to block this guy. It doesn't really – like I may have some bad snaps. I may have some good ones. But, like, I just got to make sure I block this guy. But, like, the difference is, like, he's been here for 3 years now. If I was in that mindset in year three and I had experience and I played games and I did things like that, like, I get all that. But, like – at this point in time in year three, you need to have figured some of these things out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and there's no doubt. I mean, he competed for the left tackle job in camp last year and the year prior. So it's not like he hasn't taken any snaps at the left tackle position. So, like, he should feel, I mean, I don't want to say completely comfortable, but somewhat comfortable in that spot, right? Like, and going through, it's the same offense. So it's not like you're changing terminology in your head, right? Like,
He played that all through college, where obviously they made him play guard and some other things to kind of set. So neither of us want to sit here and say he needs to do. He was put in some spots that were not helping his development.
Agreed. Complete. And I said that last year, and I completely agree with that. It wasn't advantageous for him at all, but. Listen, you're in the spot you want to be right now, right? Like,
yep.
however it worked out, you're in the spot you want to be right now, and this is your opportunity. So for me, it's how do you study yourself during training camp to make sure that you feel as comfortable as humanly possible when you go to Minnesota in week one, right? And you got to be hard on yourself. There's going to be, and unfortunately for him, there's no Micah out there to really press your buttons and push you and test you and give you very difficult looks during training camp, because that's how you're going to get your best look, is going against Micah, which like, that's why I was always super, I mean, it sucked, but like going against Clay and then going against Julius, like, yeah, it sucked, but guess what? I figured a lot of things out really quick. Rust had to come off very quick going against those guys, or I was going to be getting chewed out by Mike or Campy or Aaron, for that matter, because practice, you know, why are you letting him beat you? So, like, I was very fortunate with that. So he's got to figure this out, maybe going against guys that aren't A-tier pass rushers, but you don't go against A-tier pass rushers every single week in the NFL season. Those are certain matchups throughout the year that you get put with. But regardless, if you're questioning yourself, those are the guys you want to go against so that you can watch that tape and go, all right, so like he's seeing this. What do I need to change to put myself in a better situation? But regardless, he still has to be very critical of himself during camp to study that tape so that when week one rolls around and it's noisy and that horn's blowing and the skull chant's going and you can't hear the guy next to you, you feel good about where you're at. Yeah. Exactly. And the difference too is, like, Minnesota got rid of their best pass rusher. And that guy caused some problems for Jordan Morgan last year in that game that he played. Like, he caused some issues for him. Like, quick off the ball, Jordan was late off the ball, and that guy's gone. So, like, I don't know if they replaced him. I doubt it, because he was really good. So it's hard to replace guys like that. But regardless, you need to do everything humanly possible and stress yourself in training camp, especially as like a first year true starter at the position. I get you've played a game there or whatever, but the first time you're the true starter left tackle, you need to put yourself through the full ringamaroo of getting yourself stress tests for week one.
Blue, we always appreciate the time, buddy. We'll let you, you know, go get your second workout in or whatever else you got going on today. You know,
got. Oh, you know, he's got 18. He's got 18 in him today. There's no doubt.
Yeah,
you got 18 on your docket. Who are you, kid? Get out there and go play a little golf.
I got to, because World Cup's on at 3, so I got to get my the golf in before the World Cup.
Yeah, Brian, Brian, why are they not playing this at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock? Like, I know, is it just because of the European time change? Is that why we're not doing it?
Yes, 100%. It's so that their kickoff's at 8 o'clock over in Europe, and you know they get prime time watching, but we don't get prime time.
If the U.S. was in it, would it be at 8 o'clock?
I bet it would be at 5 or 6. Would be my guess.
Okay.
A later
they adjust
kickoff.
It based on who's playing in it. You think they adjust
it?
Yeah,
100%.
That's probably just that's smart. Okay. That's smart.
Yeah, 100%. You look at, I mean, Spain and France yesterday, their kickoff time, you know, I don't know their exact time zone, but I'm assuming they're 5 hours ahead of us. You're looking at, you know, 8, 7 o'clock based on what time zone you're in here. So, like, for them, it's perfect. For us, it's like, dude, like, I got stuff going on at 3. Like, I got to really finagle my schedule to make sure that I'm at home.
It sounds like you found a way pretty – it sounds like you found a way. You just golfed an hour earlier than you did.
Well, yeah.
You got it figured out. Yeah. I got stuff going on. I got to go fishing, and now I got to come off the boat early to go watch this. I don't even know who's playing. Espana and somebody – I don't know.
No.
Argentina-England.
Yeah, it's Argentina-England.
So
it's a big match.
Okay.
I mean, if in – Tausch, all you got to go look up is the hand of God from Maradona doing it to England back
all
in the
right,
day.
All right, I'll go look that up.
Where he handballed a goal in that they counted that knocked England out of the World Cup. So there's some bad.
Well, where's VAR?
There was no, VAR.
Didn't have
back
VAR
in the
back
80s.
Then, pal.
Yeah, no
all
VAR
right.
in the 80s. No
the
VAR.
Good old days. All right. The good old days.
All right. We've kept you long enough. Get to the golf course so you can get home in time for that the big match later this afternoon, Blue.
All right, gentlemen, take it easy.
Of course, that sucker update.
Gabe, I don't want to tell you how to do it. I think
Waukesha.
I was just going to say, we had to make sure we hit Discount Liquor. I know that's our World Cup. That's why, you know what? Shame on me. You are a pro's pro. Shame on me for even questioning that you weren't going to do that. Owen, slap me across the face. That is a misstep by me. I apologize, Gabe.
Yeah, no, I mean, you got to take care of the partners. And we got plenty to take care of here on Wilde and Tausch when it comes to the partners. But we will talk more about that list from Jason Wilde. What does our right tackle think? What does our guy Tausch think in terms of the most important offensive lineman? We dive into that coming up next on Wilde and Tausch. Tausch, we got a bit of breaking news, and while it has not been finalized, Brian McTaggart, who covers the Houston Astros, is reporting that the Astros are finalizing a deal to send veteran righty Lance McCullers Jr. to the Brewers. Now, McCullers apparently has a no-trade clause, so you would have to approve that deal in order to come to a contender like the Brewers. And honestly, Tausch, with the way the Brewers have turned like veteran pitchers around, if you're somebody who has been struggling the way McCullers has been post-surgery, he hasn't pitched a full season since 2021, waving the no-trade clause to come to Milwaukee to see if they can help fix what ails you seems like a pretty good idea for him.
And we discussed this earlier. I think everybody that's watching how this season is going and where we're at pitching-wise, it's not going to – you need to take a flyer. I think you can find – and. To Matt Arnold's credit, it really is, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Gabe. Every time he makes a move, I'm like, yep, because they're not all home runs. Some of them don't work, but it just feels like you get some value out of whatever decision you end up making. And the Brewers, even if McCullers comes over,
yes,
and he gives you a few quality starts. In the middle of this, where you're trying to close up divisions and position yourself for postseason, and he's not somebody that you can count on in the postseason, I still would say it's worth taking a flyer because where they're at with their pitching right now, I do think you need some reinforcements, and this could be a low price, potentially, I don't know if it's a high ceiling reward, but someone that can come in and hopefully regain their form a little bit and use this pitching lab that has been so good by the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, and I think the low price thing is important there as well. This isn't, Lance McCullers certainly had some moments with the Astros, especially when they were winning World Series, and he's had some good moments there. But yeah, this is going to be a very low-cost move for the Brewers. And it's taken a flyer, and it's worked out. How many times has it worked out for the Brewers? Where they've taken a flyer on
almost
a pitcher.
Always.
And yeah, and he comes in, and yeah, is he going to recapture and have a 3.16 ERA like he did in 2021? Probably not, but he doesn't need to be that good in order to have an impact on this team. We've got plenty more to get to on the Packers. We do that because hour two of Wilde and Tausch starts in 2 minutes.